Welcome to Slot of the Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run the SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, Hannah joins me with TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or if you want to participate on the web, just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 1772 or search for Starfleet Universe On Call. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, the podcast account is sfuoncall, same spelling as the email address. And of course, I have my personal account, which is Paul France, PaulFranz. And if you want to follow me, it's a warning, I am very proud to be an O's fan, a Catholic, and also I love all things tech. And of course, a tertiary account, which is my Franz Games business account, so you can look for updates on client updates and also different news that comes out of there. It's a very quiet one, so if you want to follow that, feel free. I'm not gonna blow up your Twitter feed. And of course, it's lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast, available iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. We have, of course, the Starfleet Marines Battle Manual is now out the door and available for you to purchase. You can purchase that either in Drive-Thru RPG, War Game Vault, or Warehouse 23. Also, if you're interested in going to StratCon, Gene is looking for people that are committed to going to StratCon. So it's like 3 months out from when they planned on trying to run it, but you know they're not going to run it unless they know people are going to be there. It's kind of catch 22 situation when it comes to conventions and creating an event. It's always a catch 22, which is you can get a certain number of people who are definitely interested, but you're not going to grow unless you run the event, and you can't run the events unless it grows. It's a overall catch 22 situation. Moving on to the SOB Online tournaments, and I do mean that tournaments. Currently, the Sapphire Star tournament, as I mentioned last week, is over with Jack Taylor defeating Deanna Manson. I'm not sure when number 8 is going to start yet, but in the meantime, we're actually going to have a Masters tournament, which I will be announcing this weekend. So if anyone wants to play in the Masters tournament, which is always a fun tournament to play in, because the really interesting part about it is that, okay, you start with a ship, and then you fight against another ship. Now, your ship that you get is random, except for there's certain ships that you cannot get. I think the Andromeda's one of them. I forget what else is the other ones. I think there's another one that you can't get. But the rest you can get. And then I think also you get to choose one ship that you do not want to start out with. But here's the gotcha. Here's the gotcha, folks. When it comes to the Masters Tournament, if you win, yay, you win. Guess what? You have to play the loser ship on the next round, which I think is a fascinating tournament, because you can't be one of those people who specialize in a single tournament ship. You have to have general knowledge of all the ships, the ships in the tournament, so that you can actually decently play them. So you have a wide variety of strategies and tactics, and you know how to play these ships. So if you're mainly a direct fire person, you know, do you like playing the Feds or like playing the Hydran, you know, but, you know, all of a sudden you're thrown into a Romulan. It's like, you don't know what to do. Well, sorry, that's the breaks. You got to know how to play that. So when it comes to library stuff, not much happening there. You know, it's all quiet on the Western Front. And that is the news for this week. And it's me, still the one and all, Paul Franz, welcoming you to Star for the Universe on call. And tonight, it's just me. And actually, we have Dave in the chat room. If you're over on the lovely talk show, if you're not on a lovely talk show, you can still chat with me because I'm also co-broadcasting. Hi. Over on twitch.tv. And I apologize for my lighting really is not that good tonight. I don't know. I'm not sure why it's worse than it normally is. It's over here, isn't it? Yeah. It's over there. Dang. So change the lighting over here is not going to help. Okay. But anywho, hopefully you'll have an enjoyable evening with moi. Because I'm just that awesome. Yeah. Okay. Trust me, I'm not that full of myself to believe that I am that awesome. But I've been waiting. You know, I was hoping last week. Didn't happen. I was hoping this week. Doesn't seem to be happening. And Lord knows, I should email Gary. Because actually, I do have his email address. And tell him, come on back. I want to discuss the Juggernauts, because that's one thing that he wanted to talk about. And 2 weeks ago, he actually showed up late. Unfortunately, I did not notice that he showed up late. And unfortunately, we didn't get an opportunity to talk about the Juggernauts. And what happens last week? I'm all prepared to talk about the Juggernauts. And what happens? Barry emails me, today, second generation X ships, let's talk. Because if anyone listened to last week's episode, will know that, we talked about his crazy ideas about second generation X ships, and so certain things that could be added for to make them unique and more importantly, better. Overall, I think Barry's ideas have merit for the most part. As I said last week, there's some of those things that they go too far. They're too off the deep end. I like the idea of the heat from last week. We talked about that you have. Actually, what I really like is the idea of one box on a ship generates 2 points of power. I so like that idea when it comes to second generation X ships. I love that idea in that they were able to figure out a way of generating more power using the same amount of engine. But the engine was the same size. Therefore, it takes the same amount of damage. Which means that for every point of damage, it removes 2 points of power. And overall, I really like that idea. I think it's a great idea. The idea of the outer shield, also, I like the idea. Now, the whole idea of adding the basically originally it was called the VRF, variable reduction factor, I think it was, but I think I changed to DRF, the damage reduction factor, which was introduced in the LMC. When they have the it's a single outer shield or two outer shields. I want to say two at the moment. I'm not sure. I will check. Nope. I was wondering if Dave might have mentioned something like that about that, but nope. I'm not sure if Dave knows it himself, but I really liked, I liked that idea. I'm not sure. I'm really thrilled with the idea of the damage reduction factor, because the whole idea of the damage reduction factor, as was pointed out by Barry, that one of those guys have to chest to change their names, or I have to give them a nickname or something, because I'm sorry. That. Too close together. So easy to say one of them saying the meaning the other. But anyway, Barry, he likes the idea for the, and the, but as pointed out, but Barry pointed out the whole idea was that the whole big, heavy weapons would be reduced. You have to use smaller weapons to get through, and therefore reduce the amount, the damage reduction factor, and so forth. And I'm not so sure that in the alpha octant, that was what you really want to do. Having additional shield layer, yes. Which I've pointed out before when it comes to the second generation X ships, which was a past idea, which the whole idea is an integrity field inside the ships. I like the way he wants to add it, which is via the DAC, and have it variable based on which role you do on the DAC. I'm not 100% on board with that, but have to wait and see on that. I forget if that's part of the ship or you have to actually allocate power for it. I forget which, to be honest, with Barry's proposal. Because I know one of the proposals for the second generation X ships, when it comes to integrity field, was actually you put power to it. And it was like an internal shield. Oh, body reduction factor. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. That was it. Because I remember it's VRF, because long ago and very much far away at this point, the IOMC was still in playtest. We actually added it to the client to have it so that you actually could playtest ships on the client. And see, the thing is, Ken was on board with that. Steve Call, maybe not so much. Of course, back then, I don't think Steve Call knew about it. So, I remember it called being abbreviated VRF. So, let me go back over here. Yeah. Okay. Dave posted in both chats. Thank you, Dave. Cause Dave's actually listening to on Twitch, and he's listening to it on Talk Show. I'm not sure which one he's listening to and which one he's just watching. Hopefully he's watching and listening to on Twitch, or he's just listening to it and doing something else, because I think that's usually what Dave does. Usually, unlike the radio, the talk radio where you're listening to it in the background, but you're doing something else, which invariably, that's me, because that is the case when it comes to most of the TV shows I watch. Is that, that's why I like watching, I just finished watching Doc Holliday, which I truly enjoy the movie. It's a good one with Michael Fox in it. There's another one which I remember, other than, Back to the Future, which I like those movies too. Actually, I got all three of them. I like those kind of movies. Of course, they're from way back when. some of the other ones I like to watch are Trouble with the Curb. It's one of those baseball movies I like to watch. That and Bull Durham, which I think is, oh, I love that one in some respects, in other respects, which just annoy the crap out of me. One of the things that annoys the crap out of me with Bull Durham is the way that Nuke, he gets his, gets to go and play, gets into the show, basically plays the major leagues from, and this is my understanding, is that they're not even AAA. They're like A-ball. And it's like, no, you don't normally, that doesn't normally happen. These days, it might happen. So it's more likely to happen these days than that would happen in the past. In the past, you'd be a AAA. And every once in a while, you get someone promoted from AA up to the majors. But you would never see anyone from single A. Now, the whole thing with the restructuring of minor league ball and all that kind of thing, which is, I'm going to have to wait and see on that. But anyway, getting back to the Starfleet universe. Okay, thank you, Dave. Dave's just saying that he usually just listens, but depends on the topic. And that's understandable. If anyone listens the way I listen to my podcast, most of the time you're doing something else. That's just the way it happens. There's only one podcast I listen to that I actually are actively listening to, and that's all I'm listening to. And that's actually one with this. It's my Bible. There's one which Father Mike is doing, which is a year. I forget what it's. Great Adventure. I think it's the Great Adventure reading, way of reading the Bible, which is at the moment we're doing Numbers and Deuteronomy, a chapter from Numbers, a chapter from Deuteronomy, and a chapter from Psalms. Well, not a chapter from Psalms. Well, it is a chapter, but it's a prayer from Psalms. And he reads through that, and then he makes a commentary afterwards. And when he reads it, I like reading along with the Bible, myself. So that's one of the few ones that I actually sit down and actively listen to. Every once in a while, actually, there are some that I will stop, I will rewind, and I'll actively listen to that part. Because it's some, which, there's a problem with that when it comes to podcasts, in that if I listen to a live show and they've mentioned something that piques my interest, I'm used to being able to rewind it and find out, okay, what did they just say? What was that in reference to? Because in some cases, until they say, so-and-so did this, this, and this from the Baltimore Orioles. When they say Baltimore Orioles, now I'm interested. Unfortunately, by that time, it's too late. So, that is what it is. I get spoiled listening to most things on podcasts or watching them, it's called time, for an old term time called time shifting. Wow. Oh, that's cool, Iggy. Iggy said he translated Acts from Greek to English, which is neat. I think that's neat. Man, back in the day, way back in the day, this was before. This was when you could do. There was a DOS-based program, which actually had English on one side, and then it had the Greek or Hebrew on the right side, so you could actually look up the, as you're reading, you could look up the words. Now, that's a problem for those people who don't understand the original language, Hebrew or Greek. There's a problem, which is, yes, it might say the word, and this word has this meaning, but there's some contextual and things that you will miss, which I've come to find out from just many times I've heard priests or pastors or whatever talk about this, you know, this phrase in the Bible and what it says in Greek. And in Greek, you know, they try to explain what that the meaning of those, of truly the meaning of those words can be. You know, so it's not just the English, and that's why you have different translations too. Is that, you know, that Greek can be translated in different ways. In some cases, it's a direct translation. Sometimes a transliteration. It gets difficult, you know. So anyway, back to more pressing issues with Starfleet Universe On Call. And actually, the one person that I've been waiting for, the one, the only, Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Not too bad. A bit tired, but still alive for now.
Good to hear.
Did you see the Steve Cole's posts about Module R4J? The thread hasn't been kicked off yet, but there has been word about in the My Day about apparently the alternate timeline that's going to be in it is being reviewed as we speak, and looks like it's going to be some good stuff.
No, I missed that. Because the last thing I read about module R4T was that, you know, it's out, it's available as an ebook. As soon as the counters come in, they will actually have hard copies at that point.
R4T is one of two new SFP modules that's coming out. Although, actually, speaking of R4T, one thing I think would be interesting is because the latest update to it, Twit and to the Authority Master Starship book includes a number of fast cruisers and stuff, and like light battleship and stuff. Mm-hmm. And personally, I think it would be interesting if the home galaxy Tholians and other empires in the home galaxy were allowed to have fast ships. Because I don't think it would be a deal breaker in the same way. Like, for example, they're not allowed to have X-Tech, they're not allowed to have PFs and stuff.
Right.
But technically, the details in the Tholian Master Starship book, like for the home galaxy, they don't explicitly say thou shalt not have the fast engines in the home galaxy. So I think that there'd be a place for them, especially like for them and the Nebuline and other like empires, pre-Tholian Middle Empires, to be able to use to fight each other. And I suppose it would make sense as a fast responder unit, like during the period of collective domination. So I think it would be interesting because it'd be kind of shame if there's like all of the Neo units just remained conjectural. So especially like if, I don't know if they're planning to do shapeways miniatures for them or not, but if they did, it would be nice like to give them some use historically, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed.
But for R4J, that's the one that's called Shadow of the Eagle. That's basically, it's going to be an alternate, yet another alternate timeline in which the Romulans succeeded developing warp technology independently. So mm-hmm, there's actually right. A preview of this in Caps Lock 54, because there's two SSDs, one for the W era and one for the Y era, showing what Romulan ships from those eras would have looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly the alternate timeline that's being put together is pretty interesting. So that's what Steve Cole was talking about. But personally, now I don't know if it'll actually have any room for it in R4J or not, but I'd personally be most interested, I should say, in terms of what these ships could be used for together with the Lost Empire material in Module C6. Because there's at least one of the Paravian timelines in C6 which actually says that the Romulans in that timeline develop warp themselves. So I think it would be more interesting to have a timeline where both of these things happen, where basically not only are you giving, you're not just basically giving the Romulans a warp and then away they go. You're throwing in the Paravians and an early activation ISC so that you're basically supporting the map sheet P setup in another way, kind of leveraging both products together. Mm-hmm. So you're encouraging people who don't have C6 to go get C6, or if they have C6 and they don't have R4J, they get R4J.
Right.
But again, I'm giving. I guess there's no discussion threads for R4J just yet, so I have to keep my powder dry for that one. But that is definitely something that I'd like to see at some point.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Actually, that's one thing I really should do, which is buy a module R4T from like Warehouse 23. Because that's where I buy most of my stuff when it comes to e-books. Including multiple captain's logs at this point.
I am hoping, because since it's not a formally published product yet, then hopefully there might be room to add some of those Home Galaxy. I mean, if they come out and say, no, you can't have fast ships in the Home Galaxy, then oh well. But if they do allow it, then I'd hope that there might be, you know, a bit of leeway. Because if they use the same counters either way, then all you really need is to replace the disruptors with Parthenon cannons and get rid of any fighters and just tweak it so that it's good to represent an ME1 version rather than the LQA version.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then that could have a knock-on effect. Like, say, for example, if there's either on the one hand, like say if the Sultorians get a Master Starship book in the future, mm-hmm. or on the other hand, if the Nebuline and other native empires to the M81 get properly developed in the future. Now, I don't know what Lauren Knight might have in store for them because, you know, he's the M81 expert, but I'd like to think that there is potential for some of these other empires, whoever they be, to be actually campaign compatible and to have, you know, not just basically give the Solids a cakewalk or a webbed wedding cakewalk, rather, right, in terms of their rise to power, that they actually gave them a run for their money. Or, if you think of it another way, had the Tholians not been the ones to try to, like, say, if it had been, like, if you could put these guys in some other environment, whatever, mm-hmm. where you didn't have one empire throwing around a bunch of webcasters and stuff, mm-hmm. cast web, rather, then they would have been able to hold their own, you know?
Yeah, actually, that reminds me. I know there was supposed to be a Tholian Prime Directive. And one of those things was going to cover some of the whole home galaxy, if I recall correctly. Whatever happened to that? Do you remember?
You have to ask ADB that, but there is a file called the Way Team Log, which is also available on Warehouse 23, and it has a collection of articles that are from different. Is there an echo on the line, or am I just going crazy?
I'm not hearing an echo.
Okay. So I'm hearing one on my end.
Dave, are you hearing one? Iggy, are you hearing any echo? I'm just asking the chat room to see if they're hearing an echo. Because it might, for all I know, it might be me. But I would think that if it was been me earlier, Dave would have mentioned something.
Because when I first called in, there was no echo, but now okay. I'm hearing it.
Huh, that's weird. Is it you, or is it both my voice and your voice, or just my voice?
Just mine.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's really weird. Dave's saying that he can hear it, but only from his only from your end. Okay, now, so, Mad Cow, which is Russell, and Iggy both say they don't hear echo over on Twitch, which is basically, so what I am hearing, I'm not hearing an echo, so it's only from TalkShoe seems to be related. So.
Okay.
Nothing I can do about that.
But, well, as long as it's not in the recording, I guess.
Yeah, it's not getting in the recording, so the recording will be clean. But anyhow.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, where were we? What was I going for? I forget. Oh, yeah. So actually, you know what's interesting when it comes to Prime Directive books is that Steve, one of the other things that Steve Cole posted recently was they're thinking of running a Stratcar. Later this year.
Yes,
well, hopefully
yes.
enough people will be vaccinated.
I saw it on Facebook.
Viable.
That's like 3 months They're going to be running a strat, Stratcom. Wasn't it going to be actually almost at Gene's house?
But it's somewhere in Amarillo anyway. Yeah. But one of the things that they were talking about was whether or not they'd be able to cobble together enough volunteers to use some of the time during Stratcom to brainstorm, or not brainstorm rather, but to kind of like work on updating one of the current rule books. So like, for example, there's a few books like Advanced Operations that have yet to be brought up to the new 2010 standard. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things that are in tactical operations and so forth that would need to be incorporated back, kind of retrofitted back into products like Advanced Ops and so forth in order to, you know, bring everything up to the same level. Mm-hmm. So the theory would be that they'd choose at least one of those modules and, you know, work away in it until it's done. But what he was saying is that if nobody's willing to do that, that he could just spend the week working on GURPS scores. And you know, I didn't want to be the kind of person to kind of like try to steal time from another game system, because, you know, that is important too. But I'd really like to see the Prime Directive Corps stuff, especially if it did include the Paravians as well.
Right. It sounds like what I've heard happen on developing conferences, like for a product like Drupal or Ansible or these other open source projects, where when they get together, they'll have like a sprint where they'll have a focused time where they're just working on different, in the case of open source projects, usually it's like bugs. They're just doing a sprint just to fix as many bugs as possible in person together, so that, you know, communication is optimum and so forth, and they can get a lot of things done in a short period of time. That's what it sounds like, which I think is a great idea.
It also sounds like, because the folks at Catalyst Game Live do something every few years. They get together at a hotel and hammer out what the next few years of BattleTech development is going to be. Like, for example, I think they were talking about how not that long, about a year or two ago, they did something similar for the current Ill Clan era that started with the new novel, Hour of the Wolf, that launched on New Year's Day, and with the new Ill Clan source books that's going to be coming out and stuff, because they had basically, you know, they wanted to try to iron out some of these things in person and figure out, like, what they wanted to do with the franchise going forward, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, so yeah, anyway. So yeah, basically, I'm trying to remember which part topic we were talking about. Yeah, so I'm not too sure if beyond what's in Away Team Log, although the stuff in Away Team Log is interesting if anyone is interested in the Tholians. Like, it kind of, they have a section that talks about Tholian biology, for lack of a better word, and also the structure of the Tholian society in the Holdfast. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit about Draco as well. And actually, the Draco stuff was put into the Tholian Master Starship book as well. So it might be a while before we actually see more about how the Draco Tholians come to be, you know, in terms of like properly accounting for them in SFB or Fenn Empire terms.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Just to let you know, actually, I did a little preparation and I've been prepared for the past 2 weeks.
Oh, I saw the BBS. You wanted to talk Juggernauts.
Yes, I did prepare for it. And that was one of the reasons why I bought some captain's logs, so that I could grab some of the pages so that I could show, especially in the case of the different SSDs. But also, one thing I did was I gathered together the different SSDs, different pages from the different captain's logs, all the way back to captain's log number one with the original alpha.
Oh, and did you also tee up, because what you could, I mean, if you haven't already done it, and if it sounds like work, my apologies, but you know, we were talking before about how the Juggernaut Empire ships are all on Shapeways. Mm-hmm. It might be, especially for anyone who's watching the stream, it might be useful to show, like, if you're discussing a particular class of ship, to put it like alongside the 3D model of the like the rotatey aroundy option for the equivalent Shapeways miniature, so that people know what they're buying.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Let's see if I can bring that up real quick. Shapeways project, Shapeways store. And there's 42 Andromedans already on Shapeways? Dang. Okay. Let's bring up.
Yeah. Does that, well, like, that also includes the any ships that are like doubled, basically, because one of them is in 3788 scale and the other is in 3125 scale.
Right.
Or omniscale, for that matter, for some of the smaller like sleds and stuff.
Okay, so I got the miniatures up for the Juggernaut. It looks like, in the case of like five of them, they're all painted by the same person. Just because they're all, looks like they're all using the same green color scheme.
Yeah, there's for the heavy cruiser, there's an alternate image that they have, like a cleaner one. That's it.
Yeah.
Kind of closer to the more classic color scheme.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that one, and then. Give me a sec. And then we have the Missile Dreadnought, which has, again, looks like the same color scheme, which is, you know, white with gray and a little red on the fins itself. Well, it looks like a pretty good job.
And if you could, you can actually notice that the silos have been for the Shriek missiles have actually been modeled on there too.
Yeah, oh, I see them. Dang. Actually, I did not.
Because in the long run, it'd be interesting if there's missile variants of some of the other ships as well.
Hmm. Oh, I agree. That was one thing that Iggy's saying he has zero interest in minis, and I can understand that. I don't have the biggest interest in minis just because of I don't usually have the space for them. Though I, way back when, Aaron Staley actually did a set of Andromedan miniatures, which I still have. And also I did, he also did the whole tournament cruisers, and he did that for me. And I did a couple miniatures myself. I did a the Fed CA and the Klingon D7. And I actually did those two just for demo purposes. So I had models, you know, that could actually move around the map and people liked them. Yeah, I wasn't great at painting them. Painting was actually was not. I don't think, to me, that wasn't a real big issue, painting the minis. I just usually don't have the time and the interest to do all the painting. I know some people, they're like the Warhammer 4K, who love to do all the little miniature figures and painting up so they really look cool and all that kind of thing. And I'm just, no. And I'm willing to bet you there's a lot of people out there that what they would love is along the lines of 3D printed minis, you know, some along the lines. Cause do they do that? Like, for, I think they do that for BattleTech, right? Where they're actually kind of painted minis that you can get for BattleTech.
That happened with MechWarrior Dark Age. Like, they basically you get the hero clicks had the painted figures on them. But since that went away. The current miniatures, I think there's, I can't remember, Iron Metal or something. There's basically a company that does metal miniatures, and then Catalyst themselves, they do larger runs of like plastic sprues, but you have to paint those yourself.
Oh, okay.
But counters are perfectly viable for people who like counters, and I don't want to disparage that, but I do recall that we were talking before about. You know how there's actually 7,000 scale sprues of tournament cruisers now on Shapeways.
Oh, yeah. They have the whole collection.
Yeah. So they've got ones. So basically, from each of the sculptors, they've posted sprues of the empires that they've got. So some of them are from Will McCallum, and some are from Chris Nazepak, some are from Steve Zambotti, some are from Matthew Lawson. And that's kind of why, like, if you look at the sprues, you might think, well, why are these empires together? That's basically the main reason.
Right. But getting back to the Juggernauts, I even copied the old rules too for the Juggernaut. I grabbed the Christopher Allens, who did a couple of drawings of the Juggernaut. Which they look pretty nice. And actually, they were included in the captain's log, and that's why I brought them up, because I thought they were kind of neat. Now, bring up captain's log number one. One of the things I saw, I grabbed, which was the old SSD, and this is the old way that they did SSDs back then, with the regular blocks and the dotted outline of the ship, where Steve Cole told me how they used to do it. I don't think it was with I don't think it was with computers back then. Because actually, that was one thing I was listening to. I forgot to do that. Three Moves Ahead had a game designer. I mean, this guy worked back in the 70s. And it was the Streets of Stalingrad was the game that this guy created. The first edition, which is a very large game. From my understanding, the map is really big. And he's just saying how multiple iteration of the game, and every single one was a failure. I think the first edition, I forget what happened with the first edition. The first edition was put out by, I think, Phoenix Games. And Phoenix Games said, we're gonna sell it on price. And actually, I was listening to it was a video on, in this case, Pearl. And one thing that the guy mentioned is that when it comes to competition, you never want to compete on price. You want to compete on quality. Because the person with a better quality, even though it's a higher price, will win in the end. But I'm not quite sure that Apple.
Well, that goes to that with Federation Commander, because the mainline products have the proper laminated chip cards and stuff. And I mean, in principle, you could do them as black and white or grayscale cards, but they're not quite the same.
I agree there. But I want people to see that Juggernaut now with the advent of this, which is Caps Log number 33. Was what is called the Juggernaut Beta with the Shriek missiles. Now, the one thing that was definitely pointed out that Barry and I, he mentioned it, and I had to tell him, and I just remembered that, which is the Shrieks are basically their shuttles. And, right. So it's not like, they're not like actual missiles. So when they're launched, they're gone. You don't get extra, another Shriek. So, which is good, because as I pointed out to Barry, which was that the Shriek missiles are basically, I'm not sure you know this, but Sandy Hemingway used to call the Hydron Fusion fighters that came with the, you know, the tournament cruiser for the Hydron roaming nuclear space mines because how much damage they can do. Well, in the case of Shrakes, they are roaming nuclear space mines. That's exactly what they are. Because you have to do 12 points of damage to them, and they will do 35 points of damage if they hit you. So,
so I guess the closest comparison would be the Borak hunter-killer missiles, except that the hunter-killers, you still have to arm them like suicide shuttles, whereas the Shrieks are pre-packed for you.
Yep, yep. And, which actually, I'll be honest. I didn't read the beta story, but reading the rules for the beta, one thing it mentioned about it, which I thought was interesting, which was that it mentioned that basically the beta got communication from the alpha about what happened to it. Basically, kind of, I'm willing to bet it was kind of a battle tape. You know, a black box kind of thing that was transmitted out from alpha to the beta, of what, you know, how he was destroyed and so forth. And in this case, the rotating shield is actually automatically controlled by, you know, a system which will automatically have it face the most, what's considered the most dangerous thing out there. In the case of Alpha, you know, when you uncloak the ship, the shield would pull around right to that shield facing. Well, that was one of the things in the beta. It said, you know, learning from the Alpha, it, you know, disabled that system. So it was actually controlled by the main computer instead of having it as an automatic system which would defend itself, you know, autonomously. Yeah, which to me that's interesting because that means that they were in communication. You know,
there's a similar progression. Well, you don't see it from the Juggernaut perspective, but there's a similar progression in the Fire in the Deep story in Captain Zog 41, where the we mentioned this before, but instead of Alpha, Beta, Gamma, it's like Primus, Secundus, Tertius, and so forth, and they're meeting Seltorians rather than Alpha Empires. Well, in this case, I should say the Seltorians are the ones. They're like a separate expedition, leaving M81 going presumably to the Juggernaut Galaxy, but we don't know for sure. But basically, it's that progression is similar. Like, it talks about how Secundus had these strange seeking devices that Seltorians had never seen before, and then Tertius showed up and it had a whole lot more of the same ones. And so that sounds an awful lot like the missile dreadnought to me, but right. So yeah, it's interesting because it's interesting to think that the Juggernauts might be like kind of like, well, we don't know for sure with the Andromedans, but it's not entirely impossible that the Andros are basically launching concurrent invasions of other galaxies, not just the Milky Way.
Right.
So maybe the Juggernauts are doing something similar, where they're basically they follow kind of like a
yeah. But at the same time, the one thing that was mentioned when I was reading the rules, was that the original Juggernauts were actually manned. At least they give an indication that the original Juggernauts were manned spacecraft. And for some reason, the whole crew, you know, the crews on the ship, they died. But now they're running their autonomous ships. Basically, with no crews on them, and like the Shriek missiles are basically taken from the shuttles that are part of the Juggernaut ships, and repurposed by the AI, or, you know, basically, of the ship and go, you know, we can reuse these, and we don't, since we have no crew, we can actually make them seeking, actually, they're not even seeking weapons, whether, you know, you fire and forget kind of thing. It's more fire and have them go here, because they're self, not, they're not called self-guided. I think the fly-by-wire or something like that, that kind of concept where my understanding, I might be remembering this wrong, which was that the Shriek missiles can go anywhere. They don't have to always travel, you know, as directly towards their target, you know.
Well, in CL-41, it notes that no Juggernaut can control more than 3 seeking weapons, and as of this time, they're not allowed to transfer seeking controls from one to another. But if you're wondering about the crew, I should note that there are actually 2 Juggernaut-related stories that are in Captain's Log 33. One of them is the story of Juggernaut Beta itself, and then another one is a prequel to the original Juggernaut Alpha story that basically has a Romulan, I think just one ship. Anyway, basically a group of Romulans come across Alpha just after it's passed through the galactic barrier and before it's fully woken up on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I don't want to spoil it, but I might suggest taking a look at that story too.
Oh yeah, I will. I did not realize there were 2 stories in there. So definitely, and I actually bought the ebooks just so that I could show you guys the SSDs and have good quality versus, in theory, I've got the hard copies, so I could have just scanned them in, but I went, you know, I probably make it a heck of a lot easier for me if I just bought the ones from Warehouse 23 and then just took out the pages. And, you know, because right now what I did, like, I took the pages and I combined them into a single, what I call the Juggernaut book, basically. the show, which is interesting. And, of course, the whole idea of the phasers and that they have on the ships aren't really phasers. Duh. It's just like the Andromedans. They don't really have phaser twos. Phaser two is the closest thing that can match when it comes to the weapon systems. You know, when it comes to, you know, how it does damage, basically. which I truly appreciate. I'm sure everyone's heard me talk about it, which is the whole issue I find with the Omega rulebook, which drives me crazy, which is basically and Omega phasers use the same rules as the phasers from E, whatever. But, you know, except for in certain cases, it's like, you know, guys, I personally would have liked it if they're going to have it such a whole separate section, just copy the rules. I don't care. I don't care if they're from completely just copied and tweaked. You know, I would have appreciated that myself. But that's me, because I think it looks, overall, as a rule book, I think it looks better. I understand that it's, you know, it means that people have to read longer rules, but at the same time, I think it looks better. But anyhow.
Well, speaking of non-alpha, like, phaser equivalents, I think it would be interesting one day if there was, like, just as the Juggernauts have phaser forces or heavy weapons, I think it'd be interesting if there was, like, a Magellanic monster that had heavy lasers as their heavy weapons, but you were basically, the ship kind of had to rely heavily on its bank system to an even greater extent than the current LMC in Parsu, because mm-hmm. I think that would actually make a very distinct monster relative to either the Juggernaut or to the actual LMC in Parsu themselves.
I was going to say, I think Doomsday device, I forget. I know there's something kind of like that, which is basically, I think it's, I forgot, I thought it was called Doomsday device or something like that.
There's both the Death Probe and the
Death Probe. That's
Planet
right.
Killer.
Yeah, I know Planet Killer, but it was a Death Probe, is the one I was thinking of.
I guess I would like to see that kind of Magellanic Monster be closer to a Juggernaut in the sense of being more of a functional ship, if that makes sense. Because a Juggernaut's kind of like, it has the potential of becoming a thing, whereas other things like Planet Killers and stuff are more monstery, for lack of a better term.
Right.
Like, it would be more difficult to picture turning the Planet Killer into a functioning empire. Like, it's really more like the thing, you know, the Doomsday weapon, basically, that, you know, an empire might use, you know, if nothing else, all else fails. But Juggernauts seem more kind of like you'd be able to turn into a thing that would actually be able to take and hold a territory space.
Oh, I understand what you mean, because it's less of just a roaming monster and more of this other empire, which is just roaming the galaxy they're kind of scouting the different parts of the galaxy. You know, and they're one of those empires that has, instead of staying within their own galaxy, they actually decide, okay, we've explored our own galaxy, you know, let's go outside, let's go to the next one over, and so forth. You know, that kind of idea.
Because, well, if you think about it, both the Andromedans and the Soldra could be seen as, like, when they first showed up, they were kind of like lone encounters. Like, it didn't really think in, especially with a soldier, because they're so alien, it didn't really occur to anyone who wasn't the L'Oreal that these guys were like serious trouble. And then by the time the invasion hit, it was like too late for certain empires anyway. But I guess you could kind of, if you work back of it, you would see kind of a progression where people might just like make the mistake of thinking that they were like some sort of like random encounter rather than the forerunner of Vanguard and the future.
Right. Oh. I agree. You know, it's actually that's one of those things I think is agreeable, that is be interesting to expand on, which is the idea of, you know, certain empires being extragalactic in nature, like, because the Andromedans, basically they're extragalactic, where, you know, it's not just that, you know, they invaded our galaxy, they invaded the whole, you know, multiple galaxies over the, you know, across the universe, you know, and the Andromedans weren't the only ones doing it. The Soldra, the Juggernaut, you know, the well, I was going to say the Juggernaut Empire, but that's not really, I don't think they're, actually that'd be interesting to find out, which is, because the reason why currently they call them the Juggernauts, basically, is not because that was their empire, that's because that was the name of the ship that we gave it, because it was the Juggernaut, you know, the indestructible force kind of thing. But it'd be interesting to find out the name of the Empire, which basically the Juggernaut are part of, you know, or were part of, you know, because one thing that you mentioned and what I heard was that in the case of the prequel to the Juggernaut, where they ran into the Romulans, they had a crew, but the crew kind of died in the voids of space, you know, in between galaxies kind of thing. They might be, you know, gone. I'm reading into it, basically, was that they went into hibernation in between the galaxies and they never came out. You know, they all died in hibernation kind of thing.
Well, if anyone wants to cover their ears for the next 10 seconds, I could give you more of a hint. So, let's put it this way. It didn't look like they went quietly.
Oh. Okay. That means one or two things, and I'm hoping it's the one and not the other. Neither one's good, but I'll have to go and find out, won't I?
But yeah, I think if you've got the Captain's Log 41 materials, it might be a good one. Actually, I guess I don't want to skip over Captain's Log 35 because it's got the light and heavy cruiser.
Right.
But there's not too much more material aside from those two SSDs that's in CL35 because 41 is kind of like the first time that they actually stop and think, all right, we should probably try to kind of consolidate a little bit of the info that we've released for the Juggernauts to this point.
Oh, agreed, agreed. Yeah, right? Yep. Yeah, the Juggernaut battleship, which is absolutely insane, is what it is in my mind. It's totally freaking insane. Got 6 phaser 4s.
8, actually.
Oh, yeah, well, 8. I'm thinking about the forward arc, two in the rear arc, which is pretty good protection. 150 point rotating shield. Yikes. Oh yeah, this is the Shriek one, isn't it? Yep, this is the missile dreadnought. That was the next one I was bringing up. So that's 16. Oh man, I can't imagine having 16 of those just flying around. And, you know, to anyone that'd be just scary to see.
Well, just remember, they're only allowed to have 3 on the board at once, and they can't transfer tracking. So they're feeding them in drips. It's almost like a Mithron battleship, the one that's in Stellar Shadows, and that's on Shipbreaker as well, I should add, is that that ship has 8 tachyon missile launchers, but it needs a second ship to pick up tracking for to have even 4 missiles, let alone 3, because it can only have 3 based on its own tracking. It doesn't have double-seeking weapon control. And so imagine if the Juggernaut's in a similar situation, but it can't transfer the thing, at least not now. Mm-hmm. But I think that's actually good, because allowing it to transfer tracking might just get things a bit too scary, you know? I mean, as if the ship isn't scary enough.
Oh, agreed.
But while I'm sure the likes of the battleship would be the big ticket items, part of what I've been wondering is how some of the smaller ships, like the frigates and destroyers and so forth, or even the light cruiser, would function in terms of actually being patrol ships, or, you know, the kind of things that would you'd still need in order to run an empire rather than just, like, scare somebody on occasion. I mean, even the Andromedans don't have all dominators. They still need to have conquistadors and pythons and, you know, various satellite ships and stuff.
Right. Well, it takes a heck of a lot longer. Just think about it. It takes a heck of a lot longer to build a larger ship than it does the smaller ships. You know, so the idea of building more smaller ships is that you can have a larger fleet. I'm thinking about more of the disparate fleet, the one that can actually be mobile and go more places than just, you know, having a few large ships. And of course, and then there's, of course, with the Andromedans, you have the satellite ships. The idea is that the mothership, you know, sends out the satellite ships. As the satellite ships are destroyed, the mothership goes, okay, I'm gone. You know, the idea is that the mothership is more important than the satellite ships. But also you're pointing out that...
If you think about it, the Andros aren't the only ones who do that, because like if you look at the Interstellar Concordium, their fleet, the modern fleet anyway, is designed around the Echelon formation. And the main premise with that is that you're sacrificing the frigates and the destroyers and the gun line in order to keep your cruisers and dreadnoughts alive for another day. So it's possible that maybe, like, in a Juggernaut armada, the something similar might be happening here, where they basically have to think long term in terms of what units they can or cannot sacrifice. Well, but they've got the added bonus is that even the frigate has like an explosion strength of, let me just double check what it is here.
Frigate, no, actually, explosion strength, to be honest,
75. So you can take a chunk out of a base station with that.
Understood. Yeah, to be honest, the one thing that I think, well, most part of the Echelon formation really didn't work. And I see it was a great thought. I like the idea. The one thing that I think really needed to be done to make it a viable thing is to add a rule, which is, I'm sure a lot of people would squawk at it at this point, which is limiting or restricting the number of ships in a single hex. You say
there. Well, there are super stack rules in anti super stack rules in Fed Commander, but only for direct fire weapons, not seeking weapons, so they don't really help the IC. But what I think the game that's really going to be the best in terms of highlighting the Echelon formation will be a Call to Arms Starfleet, because there's no stacking at all in that game system, because you literally have to have the miniatures, not be like be apart from each other.
Well, yeah.
Since everyone's basically having to use a proper fleet formation anyway. You'll finally have the in theory at least, you'll finally have the opportunity to really try and actually make the PPD plasma combo work as it's always been meant to intended to work in other game systems.
Right. Versus what a regular fleet would have to do. As I said, that, which is the biggest thing there, is because of in theory you can stack, you can do super stacks in SFB, and it, there's no penalty really for super stacks other than I'm gonna go back up just for a moment when it comes to super stacks, and that is the old rules. This is one of the things where the old rules did wonders. The old rules actually, you wanted to avoid some of the super stacking because of the amount of damage a ship could do when it blew up. And, because it depends upon the radius, how close you are to that ship, on how much damage you actually would take. And using the older rules, you could actually get worse damage to your ship. And that was a reason to tone down when it comes to the number of ships you had in a stack. But again, I think we both agree that I see Echelon, which is it's a great concept, beautiful. I love the idea. But in a world where you can stack all your ships into a single hex, it really is just, it's a pretty thing to do. It doesn't really, it's not a viable ship formation, basically.
Well, that'll change with if there is a proper Juggernaut Empire, because nobody's going to feel safe doing a super stack, even the Juggernaut player, when their explosion strengths are so crazy high.
Oh, yeah. That, which is one thing I think, I forget, was you or somebody else mentioned on the topic thread in the discussion board, where explosion strengths would have to be toned down when in theory you take one of your ships, drive it into the middle of the other person's fleet and explode, self-destruct, and boom.
My guy's main fleet. Concern would actually also be to do with bases, because a Juggernaut light cruiser has 222 explosion strength. So if you park that next to a starbase and wait for it to be killed, or even self-destructed, then that might be a bit good. As we were saying before, it's one thing if that's a lone encounter that you show up in a monster scenario, and it happens once and then that's it. But if these guys are going to be sticking around, then I still think it's characterful for them to have high explosion strength. But maybe they should be halved if they're a proper empire. Like,
right.
say, make the explosion strength like 111, which is still crazy, but it's somewhat closer to reasonableness, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Okay, I don't see it here. Actually, is it here? Let me see the other chart. I was wondering if... Yep, there it is. Ouch. Dang, man. I'm just looking at explosion strength. Wow. Oh, my. Dang. I'm looking at the battleship, 750 explosion strength. You just need to be close by to totally trash your ships. Dang. Anyway, I think we'll wrap it up for the evening. Gary, it's been an absolute and total pleasure to have you to show up so we could discuss the Juggernauts.
Mm-hmm. Although, I guess, I mean, like, we've mainly been focusing about, reviewing the Captain's Log stuff, but I mean, maybe in the future, not necessarily next week, but because, you know, there's plenty of other topics to talk about, but at some point, maybe, you know, dig a little deeper into the various tactics or, you know, operational things, whatever. Like, say, for example, like, if they were an empire, mm-hmm. should they have scouts? Should they have minesweepers? Or
right. Maybe
they shouldn't have some of these things. Because, like, you know, Andros don't have certain things, but they still work as an empire. So...
Right.
What kind of things would the Juggernaut Empire or Armada need in order to work as a playable empire but still be unique?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that'd be an excellent discussion to have. So, with that, Gary, you have a good night.
Thank you, kindly. Good night, everyone.
Okay. So, a nice discussion about the Juggernauts, at the very least. You got to see these really incredibly powerful ships. And I did not go over the updated rules, and I apologize. I should have gone through some of those. But definitely, we will be revisiting this again when it comes to the Juggernauts and the whole idea of making them into a player... A player empire, basically, Gary called it a campaign-based empire, so that it can actually be introduced and we can see, okay, could this actually become one? Which I think it's a neat idea. I think the idea of having certain empires which were extragalactic in nature, so that no matter where you go, like... And if they ever flesh out things like M81 or the Triangulum Galaxy, well, Triangulum Galaxy, I think it's still in playtest. Yeah, it's still in playtest. But things like that. And the Triangulum Galaxy, in the case, you know, if they can go along the timeline of the galaxy, when do they meet an extragalactic empire? It could be the Andromedans. Heck, it could be just a soldier shows up and they go, hi, you know, or possibly a Juggernaut shows up, you know, sooner or later, which leads to in my mind, the belief and the, the belief that, yeah, you're kind of a small fry in a big pool because you're an empire which is stuck within the confines of a galaxy. When you go extra galactic, at that point, you're grown to the degree where whether you've conquered. There's multiple ways that can happen. In my mind, it could be one. It could be just that you conquered your galaxy, and it's like, okay, what's next? Let's go to the next galaxy over. Or, you know, that your galaxy, you know. you basically got kicked out, and now you're fugitives from your own galaxy, like the Tholians were. That then they come from M81. You know, things like that. You know, which I always find the whole idea of that is fascinating, versus just being limited to the different empires that are within a galaxy, even though obviously that alone can take a lifetime to expound upon. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.